Hello friends and welcome to The Fergan. This is episode 2 of The Fergan podcast, recorded on Sunday the 8th of May 2022. For those of you who don't know, my name is Dan and I'm here to comment on the state of the world from a heathen perspective. This podcast isn't merely for heathens or pagans, but these first two episodes are quite heavily weighted towards those who have an interest or a curiosity as to what paganism is about and how they might go about exploring the world of heathenry. If you'd like to support the work I do, please pop over to fergan.com. That's F-Y-R-G-E-N.com. And there you can find links to other information about me, links to the Telegram channel, the Odyssey and YouTube channels, the Substack, Patreon, Subscribestar, and other means of supporting me if you're able to. So with this episode, I'd like to follow on from the previous episode, which was titled Why Paganism. In that previous episode, I sought to kind of outline why I think paganism is a worthwhile path for atheists or previous followers of the Abrahamic religions to consider, to explore. I tried to explain what I believe paganism can offer, which is, as far as I'm concerned, everything that the Abrahamic and other religions can offer, and more, particularly if you're of European ancestry. Because paganism is a far more natural, indigenous and subconsciously familiar, I would say, way of being. The last episode was a little bit longer than I'd initially planned, and I didn't get on to the part of the talk where I was going to explain how one can be a pagan. So this episode here is a follow-on from that one, and I'll do my very best to talk about the ways that one might approach paganism. And again, as mentioned in the last episode, I'm not an authority on this. I'm someone with 15 plus years of experience and background as a practicing pagan, or as I prefer to call myself, a heathen. But I'll get into that in a minute, actually, the difference between paganism and heathenism, because it is it's relevant to this particular presentation here. What happens if you are of mixed ethnicity? This is probably the first thing that you might want to consider before you decide how to be a pagan or how to experiment in being a pagan. Because I think one thing that daunts people is this idea that you have to immediately be this very observant, very knowledgeable, very astute, very confident pagan. And I can empathize with that, because when I first went down this road, it's something which I found quite daunting myself, because the people that you're listening to, the people that you're learning from, can seem like they have all the answers. They can seem like they know exactly what they're doing. And if you don't have the same knowledge or the same experience, or perhaps you don't know the names of the gods or the names of the runes, or you know, these things, you feel like you're not qualified to participate. That is absolutely not true, and I would implore each of you who is considering exploring this way of being to not feel put off by that, because we all start somewhere and no one is going to judge you for your apparent lack of knowledge. And you probably have more knowledge than you think you do. You know, a lot of people who seem knowledgeable probably don't feel that they're as knowledgeable as others out there. So there's this kind of, you know, knock-on effect of everyone's trying to impress the person who's been in it longer than they have and things like that. But don't be put off by that. Just take it one step at a time. Don't be too arrogant to think that you're beyond being schooled, being taught. You know, we should all go into anything like this with a certain amount of humility. And equally, those who have more experience than we do should show some understanding and some respect for the fact that, you know, we may not be as knowledgeable as they are, but we may be more knowledgeable in other areas, and we may have things that we can offer them in return for what they can offer us. So, first of all, I would suggest that you'd want to determine which particular ethnic pathway is for you. I, for example, am of mixed English and Dutch descent. So, for me, it's quite obvious that I should be following the path of Germanic paganism, heathenry. I do tend to use the English words for the gods and the runes, although I have a bit of an advantage there in the fact that the English runes are the Anglo-Frisian runes, so they're shared with Friesland, as opposed to the elder Futhark of wider Germania. If you're of, for example, completely of Irish descent or Scottish descent, then you would probably look more towards the Celtic pathway, so to speak. You would even though many of us do believe that the gods are the same throughout the different pantheons. As I said in the last episode, you know, we can see that Woden is Mercury. We can draw comparisons between the Brythonic god Gwydion and Woden. We can also draw comparisons between Cernunnos of the Celtic tradition and Woden. So there is a similarity to the pantheons, and I do believe that we are communicating with the same deities under different names. But I do believe that it's important to connect with them through your ethnic pathway, you know, to keep your identity intact. It just doesn't make sense, for example, I in my opinion, for someone from Poland to refer to Thor. So it just doesn't make sense to refer to the gods using the language of a different nation. If you're someone who is of mixed, you know, say that you're Polish and German, living in Germany, then I think it would make sense to use the German tradition, the German names, the German words, to approach the gods through the Germanic culture. Same as if you're, say, half Spanish, half Irish, living in Spain, then, you know, given the Celtic influence upon Spain and the Iberian Peninsula, then you might, you know, opt for the Celtic way of, you know, communicating with the gods. Largely, I think it's dictated by your ancestry and where you are, but also which culture you feel most connected to. You know, it may be, for example, that you're Irish and Italian, but you live in America. So you perhaps don't speak Gaelic or Italian. So your only language is English. So perhaps it makes most sense to connect with the gods in the Germanic tradition, more specifically the Anglo-Saxon one. So, you know, I think largely it's down to personal preference, although I would say that it makes more sense to follow what your ancestry and your heritage dictates. So once you've ascertained which pathway you're going to go down, I would suggest that the next thing that you want to do is to study. You want to read. You want to read the earliest texts from your tradition which have some kind of pagan aspect to them. You know, for example, something like Beowulf, which has a Christian veneer because it was written down post-Christianity, but it also has a strongly pagan ethic to it, because we know that the story is derived from pagan times. I'm going to list some books here, some recommendations, and these will be mostly relevant to anyone of a Germanic, specifically Anglo-Saxon tradition. So if you don't feel that tradition is particularly relevant to you, then I apologize for this being weighted towards that, but I can only speak about my own personal experience and the books that I've read and which I would recommend to others to acquire a similar kind of knowledge and fascination for the tradition. So in the Germanic tradition, the primary text is the Poetic Edda, which the Prose Edda was, I believe, a later rendition of. So the Poetic Edda is, as the name suggests, is in the form of a rather lengthy poem or selection of poems, whereas the Prose Edda is in a kind of a story format. But those are very important texts to read because we don't really have any earlier sources than those for quite a comprehensive overview of the gods and the ways that the gods were honoured and the ways that the runes were interpreted and used and the cosmology of the ancient Germanics. So that's really the first point of call. And they're very enjoyable, both of them, to read, the Poetic and the Prose Edda. You know, that if you can immerse yourself in them, and even though the language can be quite poetic and you know, oldy-woldy at times, that really does help to kind of send you back to the mindset of the people who lived in the age described in those books. I recommend the works of Brian Bates quite a lot, and I know that some people out there might find that they're a bit kind of, profane or a bit basic or you know, perhaps a bit naive. But from the point of view of bringing to life the pagan Anglo-Saxon era, I've never read better books than The Real Middle Earth and The Way of Weird by Brian Bates. There may be inaccuracies in them, in the ways that some things are presented, but for me, it really, really helped me to understand the way that my ancestors may have thought, the way that they may have seen the world around them. The way that even plants themselves have a spirit, and kind of a will of their own, and the way that we interact with the plant world, with the flora and the fauna, the way that we can use techniques such as Siddha or shamanism, you know, these techniques of interacting with the spirit world, the way that, you know, there's a scene which is described in The Way of Weird where two warriors fight just for the fun of it. They're kinsmen. They fight and one of them dies and they think nothing of it. It's very, you know, it can seem very barbaric to us, but what it helps to inform is our, it helps us to understand their view of death, their view of life and death. And the fact that they were so casual about life and death, to me, just goes to prove that they were certain of some kind of afterlife, which is something that even modern Christians aren't that confident in. You know, to have that kind of conviction in your beliefs and what lies beyond you know, Midgard, the material realm, to know that there is so much more beyond it, which we can't see or sense with our five senses, that you would casually throw away your life, to reach that. And perhaps that can help us to understand the idea of human sacrifice, which, I believe did occur at certain times in history, not commonly at all. And probably when it did occur, it was likely slaves captives taken from, enemies who were sacrificed to the gods. But if it were done willingly, then we can understand it. If we understand their connection with the afterlife and their certainty that there was more after death. This is my next recommendation, and most of these books are ones that I mentioned in the previous podcast, but I know that people have been very keen to know which books I recommend. And I will be putting a list of books in the description for this podcast as well. So if you want to refer to that, please do. But a book that I read quite early on in my exploration of paganism was by Oak, Ash and Thorn, Modern Celtic Shamanism by DJ Conway. And it's been a very long time since I read that book, but it's a book which taught me the skills needed to access this the spirit world, the other world, to alter my state of consciousness and to tap into this this other reality which is beyond the material that we can sense most of the time. And the first meditation I did after reading that book and really trying to get a good grasp of the techniques, the first meditation I did was, it was profound. And they do say that your first journey is always the most profound. And in my case, that was definitely the case. And it's not something that's easy to do, to alter your state of consciousness, to come completely out of the mundane and to access this other realm. And it's, you can understand why people use, plant teachers, hallucinogenic drugs or entheogens or mushrooms or whatever. You can understand why people use those things because it's a shortcut. But I think if you make the effort to do it without those things, then you can have just as powerful an experience. And I won't go into the details of what I experienced when I did that, but I met certain entities who have left a lasting impression on me to this day. And I can't say for certain whether they were gods or whether they were other aspects of myself, or whether they were ancestors or guides of some other kind, but they were tangible energies and tangible characters which taught me certain things which I believe that I needed to know about myself before progressing down this path. So yeah, if for nothing else, I do recommend that book for learning how to access these other states of consciousness. And then there are a series of books which just helped me to learn about the old pre-Christian culture, the beliefs, the superstitions, the mythology, the gods, the goddesses, the ways of conducting oneself. So I'll just sort of rattle off some of these books. There's The Lost Gods of England by Brian Branston, Looking for the Lost Gods of England by Kathleen Herbert, Path to the Gods by Swain Wodening, which is quite a short book. Its subtitle is Anglo-Saxon Paganism for Beginners. That was a good one. Hammer of the Gods by Swain Wodening, which is a more comprehensive book about kind of giving an overview of the rites and the festivities and the ways that we would honor our old traditions. There are various essays by a well-renowned author called Hilda Ellis Davidson. I've read a few of them, but by no means most or all of them. It's something I endeavor to do actually, is to read more of her work, because she's someone who clearly threw herself into the source material and really came to understand it quite well, and then was able to articulate it and condense that information into various essays on different topics. Arsa True by Stephen McNallan is an excellent all-rounder to understand the reasoning and the techniques and the practices and the dare I say logic of following a heathen religion, although I know that Stephen himself would prefer to always refer to it as Arsa True, you know, true to the Arsa gods, as opposed to heathenry or paganism. Rudiments of Rune Lore by Stephen Pollington. I mean, most of Stephen Pollington's books are excellent, but Rudiments of Rune Lore is a very thin but concise and it's a book that I refer to regularly, particularly with regards to the rune. Well, I mean, it's about the runes. And anytime I need to refer to the runes or to try and understand better the runes from a more authentic perspective, I always turn to that book. It also includes the various rune poems, which is always a handy thing to have, because those are considered source material as well, along with the Eddas. And then a fairly new book, which a good friend of mine gave me for my birthday last year, which has become a real go-to in terms of trying to get to grips with when and how to honour the high festivities, is a book called To Hold the Holy Tides by Thorbjørn Eldeblotir. He also goes by the name Thorbjørn Lindley, I believe, and he's an American of I would imagine English descent, who is very, very knowledgeable. He's a Gothi. He has done a lot to reinstate the old authentic English pagan ways. So that's a really good book. So I think it's important initially to start off as what people would refer to as a lone wolf, you know, to bolster your own knowledge, to really try and understand at least the basics of these traditions, you know, to go back to, so, you know, the old material. as early as you can, as authentic and early as you can. And of course, some of the more recent books, like Brian Bates' books, are also highly valuable as well. But if we go to the earlier texts, like the Eddas, like the rune poems, like the older books written on these subjects, or essays such as Hilda Ellis Davidson's work, just to give one example. If we go to those sources, we can form a more pure, I guess, opinion or understanding of the old ways that is not coloured by the more recent modern opinions of certain authors who may have interpreted, for example, someone like Swain Wodening may have based some of his works on the works of Hilda Ellis Davidson. I'm not saying he did, I'm just giving an example here. And Hilda Ellis Davidson, in turn, she would have gone to the original sources. So as much as we can cut out the middleman, I think it's good to do that, especially in the early stages, because we can then build a kind of uncorrupted understanding and our own interpretation of these things, which gives us a more, a less confused, less muddied understanding of what our ancestors may have believed. So that's a good kind of exoteric start, I would say. But what's very important, I think, with paganism is to balance the exoteric with the esoteric. So we have studying texts, reading academic works, and enhancing our knowledge of how things are supposed to have happened. And we have the rites like Blot, which I'll talk about in a minute. But then we also have the more esoteric side of things, which some people refer to as UPG, which is, I believe, stands for Unverified Personal Gnosis. So we have an understanding of the pagan ways, which is not learnt through books, not seen through the lens of others, the perspective of others, but is something that is gleaned firsthand. And the way to do that, or one of the best ways to do that, is meditation. So as I just described, after reading by Oak and Ash and Thorn, the book about modern Celtic shamanism and going on my own spirit world journey, meditation is done very deeply, can take you to this altered state of consciousness to access this other realm, which was known to our ancestors. You know, our ancestors knew of different realities which were kind of layered on top of one another. And in the Germanic tradition, we have nine worlds. And Woden himself was known to traverse the worlds freely. And the other gods could traverse the Bifrost bridge to Asgard. So being able to cross over between these perceived realms is something which is deeply ingrained in the tradition, and I believe it's a good idea to at least attempt to do that ourselves. And even if it's something that we find we're unable to do because we can't switch our brain off, it is a difficult thing to do, and it does take perseverance and practice, or perhaps just being in the right place at the right time. Some people have a better ability for it than others, but we can at least try it. And even if we're not able to fully detach from this, our normal earthly realm, and to kind of access these other realms, even if we're not able to do that, we can at least quieten our mind to allow other energies, other entities, whites, ancestors, gods, or even the runes themselves, to permeate our consciousness, to give them give them a space, give them a doorway to enter into our lives in some way, and just simply quietening our minds and sitting still for even just 15 minutes can be quite advantageous. And that's, as I say, that's a more esoteric approach. So I think most people would expect that one of the main things that you need to do to actually be a practicing pagan is to worship, is to perform the rites. The most common form of worship, the most common rite that we have in Germanic heathenry is the blot, which is traditionally is a sacrificial feast. So the information that we have from older sources reports that cattle and ale would have been bought on a specific day or a specific evening on a specific occasion to a place where the animals would be slaughtered sacrificially. They would have been offered to the gods, and the way they would have done that, they would have captured some of the blood of the animal. They would have put the blood in cups. These would have been chlout vessels, blood vessels, and they would the goti or the githya, the priest or priestess, would use an evergreen sprig to dip in these cups, and then would sprinkle blood all around the premises, around and all over the people attending the community who were there for the blot. They would have selected certain gods and goddesses to honor with the sacrifice. They would have named them. And this is, an important thing I think I can mention here is that critics and detractors of paganism would say, by sacrificing to the gods, you are, it's almost like you're paying some kind of ransom to them, you're having to buy them off, essentially. To do your bidding, or to remain content with you, to remain happy with you, but that's not the way that it should be seen at all. If a friend comes to visit and you offer them food and drink, are you buying them off? No, of course not. And the gods and ancestors should be seen in the same way. We're sharing with them. We're inviting them into our lives. That's what blot is really about, is maintaining a connection with the gods and goddesses, because we do consider them to be family, in the same way that we consider our ancestors to still be family, even when they've passed on. We invite them to participate in our lives and to share our wealth with them, and to thank them for the efforts that we believe that they continue to put in on our behalves. Even though we can't see them with our earthly eyes, to know that they are working energetically behind the scenes, with us and for us, as any member of our community would do. So we invite them to be with us at a specific time, and we toast them, just as you would toast a friend who comes to visit. Then perhaps we would fill cups with ale, and there may be a different cup for each different god or goddess that we're appealing to. the cup would be hallowed. That's usually done. And in the group that I'm part of, we hallow the mead. We don't do animal sacrifices. And this is not... And by the way, the animals that were sacrificed were eaten. It was a sacrificial feast. They weren't left to rot as though they were somehow symbolically being, as far as I understand it anyway, they weren't left to rot as though they were somehow being consumed by the gods. Perhaps, cuts of meat were, but most of the meat was eaten as part of this celebration. I myself don't eat meat. And most heathens I know do eat meat, but nevertheless, meat doesn't tend to play a part in most modern blots. Most modern blots consist of a drinking horn full of mead, which is hallowed, usually by making a cross of a hammer, perhaps even using a hammer to motion the shape of a certain rune or symbol over the drinking horn or the cup to hallow it. You might say something whilst doing that. You would then consecrate the offering. You would share the offering round. You know, you would perhaps stand in a circle with a group. The drinking horn would go around three times, and on the first time, each person would take a drink. They would hold the horn up. They would honor the god who has been chosen for the event. Perhaps if you were doing a blot to elicit, you know, good crops and peace, you may speak to Freya. Or if you are going to war, you may speak to Woden. Or if you are looking for protection from disease or famine or something, you may honor Thunor or Thor. You would perhaps on the second time around the circle, the drinking horn, you may then speak to, you may toast the kindred, you may toast your kinsmen who are there. Or other gods of your choice, perhaps. Maybe the third time round, you would then, the third time round may act as some kind of symbol, which is another rite other than blot, which we have in Germanic heathenry. And symbol is essentially an opportunity to boast of deeds that you have done and will do. And you're almost making a promise to the gods and ancestors there, because they're with you in that moment. You've invited them into the circle through your offer of sacrifice and through the collective intention of the blot. So whilst the gods and ancestors are there, you may promise to do something to honor them in some way, to honor your family in some way. And, you know, we have in the Poetic Edda, we have verses like the one I'm about to read, which is a translation of words which probably would have been spoken. It goes, "Hail to the gods, ye goddesses, hail, and all the generous earth. Give to us wisdom and goodly speech and healing hands lifelong." You know, you would say something grand and something in a clear manner, something bold, something which can't be misinterpreted, something pious. You know, you wouldn't hide or withhold your respect for the gods or goddesses when you say words like that. And that's generally a blot. And you know, to those of you who've not participated in a blot, that may all sound quite complicated. But what I'll say to you now is most of the blots I perform are solo. I do them on my own. And they can literally be as simple as this. I can, one evening, I can pour some mead or whiskey or some other alcoholic beverage into a cup. I usually choose, you know, a special one that I have. I can walk to the end of my garden where I have a silver birch tree. I will first consecrate the space by, you know, imploring to Thunor to guard the sacred space. And I will then simply speak to the gods or goddesses or ancestors to thank them for something specific or to request assistance for something in my life. And the way that I speak to them, although I try to make myself as clear as possible, it's quite informal. You know, I will speak to them almost like I would speak to a friend or family member who I respect. and I would then pour some of the libation at the foot of the silver birch tree, and then take a sip myself. And I would then thank the gods or goddesses or whites or ancestors, and then return to my house. It's as simple as that. And prayer is something which is not a specifically Christian thing. I think you don't even need to necessarily offer any kind of sacrifice. If you happen to find yourself out, you know, walking your dog or something, and you feel compelled to speak to certain gods or ancestors, then why would you withhold from doing that simply because you don't happen to have a libation on hand to offer at the same time? I don't think that that's necessary. And of course, opinions on this will differ, and I'm sure that some out there will say that the methods that I use are inauthentic or, you know, whatever, could be improved. And yeah, I'm sure that they could. And I'm always looking to find ways to approach the gods and goddesses and ancestors more respectfully, and with more clarity, and with more sincerity and authenticity. So I'm still learning. I'll say that every episode of this podcast, I will admit that I'm still learning, and I hope that I'm still learning till the day I die. And I hope that even those who feel like they know how to blot better than I do will admit that they can learn as well, if not from me, then from someone else. So that's the main rite which we would perform, and that can be done spontaneously. It doesn't need to be done on specific occasions. But of course, we do have the festivals. You know, we have Yule, we have Easter, we have Winterfilleth or Alfablot, you know, in the same season. We have Midsummer, the equinoxes. You know, and people choose to, different heathens or pagans choose to honor these at slightly different times. They're different for the different traditions. And even within Germanic heathenism, people differ on when these things should be done. I would say just don't get too hung up on precise dates. Of course, the books that I recommended can give you a good clue as to when to do it. And of course, you can ask other people who have more experience. You can ask them when good times to do these things. But I think what matters is that you do make the effort. You do try to make a habit, to make a routine of honoring the seasons, because we have a very cyclical worldview. And it's important to us as pagans, this perpetual cycle of events of growth and death and rebirth and growth and death and rebirth, and this happens on many levels, and we can see it most obviously in the seasons. Lastly, I would say this is kind of like a pet thing of mine, really. I believe that the highest form of worship is creativity. I say that as a musician and an artist, sort of semi-artist professionally. You know, I do some illustration work, but my passion is music, and some of you all know me for my project Walkensman. Using the skills and the talents that were, and the time, because, you know, don't forget, we're a product of our forebears, and by birthing us, they gave us the most precious thing of all, which is time, opportunity, time in this world to experience. We inherited talents and skills from them, and putting those into practice in the most potent way possible, and knowing that we are ultimately descended from the gods and goddesses, or that's certainly my belief, but even if you don't believe that we are descended from them, we can still look to them as a form of creative energy which imbues us. And using that creative energy to the best of our ability, I can't personally think of a better way to honor them than by doing that. So whatever talent you have, or whatever passion you have, nurture it. Even if you don't feel like you do have a talent, try to find something that you're at least passionate about, even if you don't feel that you're excellent at it, and perform it, whether it be music, singing, learning piano, drawing, crafts, even sports or health and fitness, you know, making the best physical example of your body possible. That's one hell of a way to honor the gods and ancestors, because you are making the most of the so-called clay that they created, that they molded you from. You know, that we are from this earth, and to be the best example of a human being is a hell of an act of worship, I would argue. That was a song called The Monomicht, which is a song I wrote for my project Walkensman. The lyrics for that were taken from an old Borderlands charm from, I believe, the lowlands of Scotland, or perhaps Northumberland, that general area. So it's linguistically, it's kind of a, I think it's Scots English. And I composed the music for it. And I wanted to play that for you because since my first daughter was born, and she's nearly 9 years old now, since she was a couple of years old, I should say, she has demanded that I recite or sing that for her every night before she goes to sleep. And then my two children since then have also demanded it. So every single night for hundreds of days now, I've sung that. And this is another example of how we can put ourselves into the pagan mindset, because that song is generally believed to be about Woden, who is fending off the nightmare. You know, we get the word nightmare from the nightmare, the night horse who rides and brings bad dreams to us. And in this, Woden is fending off the nightmare. It's, yeah, the monomicht, he raid on icht, we need a sword and a third and a licht. He socked the mare, he fond the mare, he bond the mare with her ain hair. And on gerd her swa by midamicht, she wold nae mare, rid on icht, war eins he raid dot monomicht. And that's something, when I first came across that charm, it's something that I committed to memory instantly. I just wanted to know it, even though it was in an unfamiliar form of English. It sounded so magical to me. So it's something that I took into myself and then eventually made a song of. And I think this is an example of a way that we can change our mindset, just to be open to these things, these kind of mystical things that we come across, artifacts or poems or stories or whatever, and just become obsessed with them and hand them down to our children. So after you've you know, chosen your particular cultural pathway and read some key books to get a basic understanding, and then perhaps attempted to perform a blot on your own, then you might want to look for others to join forces with, to perform blot with, a community of heathens or pagans who you can practice with. And not everyone gets to this stage, and not doing so doesn't necessarily mean that you're not a pagan, but I would definitely say that it will expand your understanding of what a truly authentic pagan path is, to do so with others, because paganism was always the way of the folk. So it was always a communal way. It wasn't something that just a few members of the community believed in and practiced, you know, on their own, out of sight. It was something that the whole community collectively believed in and came together to uphold. It's obviously different in our modern age, and the vast majority of people are not pagan, certainly not knowingly. So it's necessary in our modern times to begin with a more individual approach, but there are groups out there that we can join with. So I'm not going to name specific groups. You probably have heard of some. You know, there are certainly very active groups in America and in England. I'm not too sure about elsewhere. Australia, I believe there are a couple of active groups. I believe there's actually quite an active group in Tasmania. Germany, not so much. As far as I know, there's not a great deal going on there. Hopefully you can correct me. I hope that I'm completely wrong in saying that. But certainly in England and America, there are some very active groups. You just need to Google search, I should say web search, not Google. Just, you know, look around. If you know anyone that you think might be involved with these groups, get in touch with them and say that you're interested. And as long as you're a trustworthy person, you'll generally be welcomed into these groups. And, you know, coming along to a single moot, as they're often called, doesn't necessarily mean that you're oathed to that group for life. You know, it can be quite a casual introduction. And if you don't enjoy it, or you don't feel that that group practices in a way that you would like, then there's no shame in walking away and cutting ties and maybe finding another group. But do make the effort, because it's such a wonderful experience that very first time that you honor the gods and goddesses with others who are doing so with conviction, without any sense of irony, people who think like you and have a similar energy. It's incredibly liberating to be amongst those kinds of people. You'll learn a lot from them. They'll learn from you. You'll probably make friends for life. And yeah, you may have to travel several hours to meet with these groups. Once, twice, four, maybe more times a year, however much you're able to and willing to. But it's worth it, because it's being a pagan is not a casual thing. It's not something that you can just dabble in for 5 minutes a day or whatever. You know, you may feel that at some point that you do consider yourself a pagan or a heathen, and you are willing to become that publicly. So you'll start wearing jewelry. You might wear a hammer around your neck if you're a Germanic pagan, or indeed if you're more of the Celtic or Slavic tradition. Of course, there are thunder gods in all of the pantheons. You may start to become outspoken. If you overhear conversations among colleagues or friends about certain subjects, you may wish to start notifying them that you are a pagan. It's something which it does take a while to get to that point, because most people do treat paganism with a certain amount of skepticism, to say the least, if not outright mockery. But you know, in my experience, you get to a point where you just don't care about that anymore. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what others think. And to be honest, if they think that your belief system is a joke, are they really worth being friends with? Maybe they are, but maybe you think that some of their lifestyle choices are a joke. Maybe they spend 6 hours a day playing video games or collecting Star Wars characters or whatever. And I'm not necessarily pouring scorn on people who do those things, but you know, you may lovingly mock them for that, in the same way that they lovingly mock you for your pagan beliefs. My wife and I, we have a hammer hanging from the interior mirror of our car. I figured, if the pagans of old would, decorate ships with hammers and runes to get them across the sea safely, then why should we not bring the symbol of Thunor along with us for a similarly safe journey? And touch wood, so far we've always had safe journeys, I think many of you listening, many of us out there are at various points in this journey, which I've tried to describe in a kind of linear fashion throughout this podcast. The order of things the way that things should be done, in what order we should kind of approach this journey, this exploration. And I would just say, lastly, on this, to be a pagan is not, it's not just something that you, as I mentioned a moment ago, it's not something you just dabble in for 5 minutes a day when you're, reading a book on runes, and then for the rest of the time you don't even give it a second thought. It has to become an all-permeating way of being, of seeing the world, because I think that's that is the defining factor in being a pagan, is seeing the world as a pagan, in actively approaching every problem or opportunity or wonderful occurrence that you might witness, in approaching that as a pagan, with a pagan worldview. So you might look for signs or synchronicity in things, and you, when you do find a synchronicity in things, you know, perhaps you know, you keep coming across websites or books which mention a specific god or a specific rune or something like that, and then all of a sudden friends of yours mention the same god or the same runes or, you know, something like that. That's just an example. Then as a pagan, you would then say, well, that's not coincidence. There's more to this than that. That god is actively appealing to me in some way through these signs and symbols. And then you would perhaps perform a blot to that god, because that god has all of a sudden, through no choice of your own, become prominent in your life and in the things you witness. We respect the concept of weird, which is the old Germanic concept of it's not like fate in the sense that our destiny is predetermined, but it's more like, because of past actions, you have certain choices available to you. So you can still choose your path ahead, but your choices are limited by what has gone before, and not just in your life, but in the lives of your ancestors or those around you. Their decisions have put you on a certain path where certain opportunities are available to you. And there's no point in bemoaning the fact that you don't have all the opportunities that everyone else has, because you know that your path is different from theirs, and all that you can do is make the best of your situation. As mentioned in the last, in episode one of the podcast, personal responsibility is a huge thing in paganism. It's not like with Christianity, where you can live a life of vice and degeneracy, but then repent, you know, with your dying breath and be accepted into heaven. We believe that we are, well, I'm not going to say we here, because a personal belief of mine is that we're always being watched, and we should always act as if we're being watched. You know, even if there's no living being around us, that our ancestors or the gods are always observing us to see our worth, to see what their progeny is up to see what we're making of the life given to us. So there's no point in acting in a degenerate manner throughout your life and then expecting to be received by the gods and ancestors. I don't believe that that's how it works. And that's, as I said in the last episode, that's an incredibly empowering thing for me to feel that way, because it makes me a better person, and it gives me a reason to strive to be a better person. It's an opportunity for growth and for knowledge. And I know that it's not in vain. When I choose to read a book instead of watching 4 hours worth of mindless television, or I choose to, you know, lift weights instead of, you know, going to the pub and drinking, I know that it's not in vain, that even if my wife doesn't care that I'm doing those things, that there is someone out there in another realm who is witnessing those things and making a note of them, so to speak. Living in harmony with nature is a key thing, and you know, this is, I would say that as a pagan, you have to, by default, you have to be an environmentalist. You have to care about the natural world. It's just part of the territory. And if you don't, I don't see how you can consider yourself a pagan. Utilizing the natural human gifts and skills granted to us by the gods, you know, this kind of ties into creativity being the ultimate act of worship. You know, we are using our innate or learned abilities to the utmost extent that we can. That's a pagan way of being. That's a pagan mindset. And just embracing the journey, embracing the mysteries, knowing that we will spend our entire lifetime trying to understand the ways of the universe, of the cosmos, of the nine worlds, or whichever worlds, you know, are believed to exist in your tradition, in your ethnic tradition. Learning to understand these things and to build a connection across those barriers. This is a pagan mindset. And these are things which we can always be doing throughout every aspect of our lives, every decision we make. If we're doing it in honor of the natural world and of our ancestors, because it is an ancestral religion, and ancestor worship is one of the core tenets of paganism. So always thinking that way in everything we do, whether it be in our work life, in our social life, in our creative life, in our love life, you know, it carries through to everything. Seeing opportunity in everything is a very pagan mindset. So there we have it. I've probably missed some things out. And of course, this is just a very kind of basic beginner overview of how to be a pagan, how to begin that journey. And as I say, I will put a list of book recommendations in the description. And lastly, the answer to last episode's riddle. So if you didn't catch the first episode of the podcast, a regular feature is going to be that I will read a riddle from the Exeter riddle book, an old collection of Anglo-Saxon riddles. So the answer to last episode's riddle is a storm. It's a dramatic description of a storm. So I'm sure most of you probably guessed that. And for the episode's two riddle, I shall now read that out. And give it some consideration. And let me know in the comments or don't what you think the answer is. And I will reveal that in the next episode. So riddle number two for episode number two. Sometimes I plunge through the press of waves, unexpectedly delving to the earth, the ocean bed, the waters ferment, seahorses foaming. The well mere roars, fiercely rages, waves beat upon the shore, stones and sand, seaweed and salt spray are savagely flung against the dunes when, wrestling far beneath the waves, I disturb the earth, the vast depths of the sea. Nor can I escape my ocean bed before he permits me, who is my pilot on every journey. Tell me, wise man, who separates me from the sea's embrace? When the waters become quiet once more, the waves calm which before had covered me. Thank you very much for listening to episode two of the Fergan podcast, and I look forward to speaking to you all again in the next episode.